The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Kenga kiriro o te motu raro mai kia on the rag ho konei ipurangi mō ngā manawahine. Citizens of the Nation, welcome to On the Rag, a podcast for and about the mana of women. Ko Alex Casey aho, I am joined as always this month by Leonie Hayden.
Kia ora.
And Michelle Court.
Hello.
How is everybody doing?
We're great.
There's going to be some chaotic energy on the podcast today, I
Look,
feel.
It's Pisces season and Mercury in retrograde.
God, I hate that retrograde shit.
Yeah. I believe in Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
That's good, because everyone's shitting on him right now, so he needs someone to believe in him.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
There's been a lot of... Is that why? Anyway. We have to begin with some housekeeping, some on the rag news that I'm actually leaving the spinoff in April, which is crazy and exciting and terrifying.
It's really exciting.
And sad and weird.
I am so happy for you.
I think it's a bit random. I think it's the more I think about it now, you know what's weird? So I have taken a new job, probably the only thing I would ever leave the spin-off for, which is a position at Warner Brothers New Zealand, working on their reality television shows.
Which is a job made for you.
So, Alex Casey.
Thank you. But the day that I resigned, I got my period. And I was like, did I just do all of this because of PMS? I literally had the thought, because I can't trust myself.
Yes.
I
buy terrible clothes when I'm premenstrual. I come out with, you know, pants that don't fit. So maybe think about it.
It's all a PMS fever dream. Oh, cool. Well, we'll see you back here at the spin-off
I'll be
in a
back.
Few months.
Like, it's all out of my system now. But yes, so I will be leaving for at least a while until I figure out my hormones. And but we've been having some conversations here about kind of the future of On the Rag as it stands. You may or may not know, we're also very excited to be making season 2 of our web series, which we go into kind of quite an intense production schedule in the next couple of weeks, which is very exciting.
And that's going to keep you entertained for pretty much the whole year.
It will be rolling out, I think, until probably December. We've got 8 episodes and some very exciting topics. But I thought, given that we'll be making that and there's just these sort of life changes, that the podcast, as it currently stands, is going to go on a little bit of a hiatus.
We're just going to give it a rest, give it a little lie down.
Give it a nice sleep. I think sometimes feminists just need a sleep.
Yeah. It's a nana nap for the pod.
A rest.
It's not goodbye forever. It's a bit of a One Direction indefinite hiatus, you know?
Yeah.
And look at their solo careers now.
I know, they're just blooming, most of them, except for Louis.
Watermelon Sugar.
I don't know, yeah.
He's got a kid.
Oh, true.
So
we'll keep you amused with the web series for the whole year, and we promise that we will come back at the end of the year for sure, if not before.
Yeah.
With a, here's what we did, and what did you do, and what's the world like? And that's assuming the world's still here.
Well, exactly.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Mercury. I would like to talk about coronavirus.
Are we ready? Are we prepared?
I read the incredible, we were talking about it just before, Susie Wiles wrote, well, I think it's a useful piece. It's saying don't panic, but be prepared.
Yes.
and then induced a lot of panic.
I freaked out.
It's
if Susie says that I need to lay in enough food for 2 weeks, I'm suddenly going to go and lay in food for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I started looking at the pantry and I was like, oh my God, the cats, like, I've need a stockpile. But hey,
can
it's all right.
Can cats get coronavirus?
No, but you might not be a, well, I don't know, actually. I just dismissed that out of hand with no knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah.
But if you were isolated in your house, this is the suggestion that if you had to self-isolate for 2 weeks, who's going to feed the cat? Exactly. I mean, who's going to get the cat food is what I mean. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a lot of unknowns.
They'll just feast on your rotting corpse in the kitchen
that is
for a
true.
While.
That
is
true.
That
is true. They'll be sitting there going, are you dead yet? Are you dead yet? Because I could just nibble on that.
So that's dark.
Okay.
That is dark.
It's really dark.
Be prepared, everyone.
You're going to miss all this good chat, aren't you? All this feminist discourse about cats eating rotting corpses.
I bought some masks, and then Michelle informed me just before that the masks only help if you've got the virus. They don't really help you not get it.
Yeah, because it's kind of, it's droplets, so it's more likely to go hand to face. And if you're wearing a mask, you'll be fiddling, this is Susie again, you'll be fiddling with your mask so often that you're more likely to infect yourself.
Spread it all over your face.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I've also seen something on Twitter doing the rounds, apparently men or people with beards, I should say, who wear the masks need to be careful about their facial hair configuration because certain, for example, a goatee or more of a neck beard or a chin strap, for example.
All the best ones.
All your boyfriend's beards.
The ones you love.
Can kind of mess up the mask and make the droplets come out.
Okay.
That's what she said. Okay, so I told you this was going to be a chaotic podcast. I don't know who I am anymore. Let's talk about Hannah Tamaki.
Yeah.
I don't know her.
Wow.
What a saga this week.
What a saga.
So it kind of did, I think it kind of came out last Sunday.
Yeah.
There was a spy sort of Hannah Tamaki, sources close to her confirm that she's going to be on Dancing with the Stars. And I was really certain it was going to be fake.
Yes.
I was like, this is, how? Does a decision like that get through so many people?
Yeah, how does anybody walk out of that meeting and going, well, that was a clever idea. Let's move forward with that.
And then it was, as it turns out, it's the second time they had offered because she posted about it in 2018 about how she'd, girls should not dance around in their knickers and how she, as a decent Christian woman, had turned down Dancing with the Stars because Jesus wouldn't be into it.
Right. Uh-huh. Mm.
Girls in their knickers. So twice. Yeah. Executives of a national TV show have gone, you know, it'd be great talent.
Somebody who's really a homophobic.
That lady that hates Muslims and queer people.
Yeah. So, yeah, amazing. And I think it's one of the things that really hit me was the disconnect between the people who make those kinds of decisions and the people who actually work for the organisation. And I thought Kanoa Lloyd's piece on the project, her op-ed on the Monday, was superb and quite courageous, not just of her but of the whole team who work on that show, because they were basically, well, they were saying our employers have made a terrible decision and we'd like them to not do that, please.
Yeah. And of course that brave act was repaid with some of the most heinous, threatening language and behaviour one could possibly imagine, including from the campaign manager of Disney Church's political party, Vision NZ.
Can I just ask, maybe nobody knows this, but the whole idea of women bleeding out of their eyes, what is that about? Because I've heard
it. I mean, it's a very biblical reference.
Like, Trump. Is it about periods?
Well, when Trump said it, it was about
bleeding
Megyn
out
Kelly,
of her whatever.
Bleeding out of her eyes, bleeding out of her whatever. Yeah, suggesting that she was menstruating and therefore irrational. But it's just that thing about rotten pig bleeding out of her. I don't understand the bleeding. I'm sorry, this is a distraction, but it seems like this is an insult that I have come to very late in life.
Yeah. It's not your run of the mill, is it?
No.
It's not, yeah.
No.
Your average
I don't know
thing.
If it's an Ebola reference. I don't know what's going on.
There was, of course, Javon Galter,
who was asked to no longer be the campaign manager for Vision NZ, although I gather they're all mates still.
Yeah. It's funny also to be like, that's where we draw a line.
Yeah.
You know? All that other stuff is all good.
Yeah.
But as someone pointed out in the office, I can't remember who it was, and a kind of, well, it's not funny, but an interesting wrinkle of that was the initial meme that he posted with that, not meme, but the infographic that had that horrible phrase printed on it was put over a photo of himself.
Yeah, that's weird.
Like a kind of branded Jivan photographic background. It was just a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah.
But, man, Kanawa and our own Emily Wright wrote a piece about it and just went through hell. Like, she was posting some of the stuff that people were saying about her and read actual death threats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they are. Yeah. People saying.
From all kinds of people, not just men as well, men and women. It's very disappointing. But also, as Emily pointed out, so Destiny Church has this group called Man Up where they teach men to be more responsible in their lives and for their families, except for their methodology is really fucked because it's Destiny Church.
Yeah.
So they've been trying to get all this government funding for Man Up and they can't because they can't prove any of their methodology and actually the people who go through it are probably not better off.
Yeah.
And so there's all these men who are supposedly part of that program who are threatening Emily with violence.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if your program's working, bro.
Yeah. No, it's supposed to be about anger management.
Yes.
And their PR person was so volcanic with rage that he posted something that is actually illegal.
Yeah.
So, nah.
So great decision by everyone who didn't give Man Up any funding. But yeah. Also, those guys.
I guess one of the things that I took out of it as a positive was that it really exposed what those people are like. And, you know, like Brian Tamaki, it's gone now, but I've got a screenshot. He posted about how the media and the entertainment industry is full of terrible people. Thank you. with a photograph of Jacinda Ardern and Helen Clark wearing hijab. And Kanoa, a screenshot of her looking very angry, and it makes you go, "Oh, I totally see what you're on about now. You are racist, and you are all the things,
xenophobic, yeah. Homophobic.
You have just proved everything that we thought." So,
can I read the list of things that the media are?
Please,
can I tell you which ones I am?
Yeah. Tag yourself. So Bishop Brian Tamaki, huge old quotation marks around Bishop, a venomous, dirty, liberal left, sexually confused, effeminate, booze-drenched, antichrist, false wannabes, double negative, relationally messed up, insecure people have risen in New Zealand. The media are full of them, along with the social and entertainment industries, full stop, real men / woman singular.
Hallelujah.
And then what's that photo?
And then a photo of three men in the bush wearing polar fleeces.
That's the post that originally had Kanoa looking angry, Jacinda and Helen in hijab.
So they just replaced it with
three random bros who look a bit military but without weapons.
Doing like a shaka bra as well. They've all got shaka hands, but one of them's holding a couple of thermoses so he can't.
He's trying though. He's straining to get the shaka out.
Why is effeminate bad for one thing? But also, if you do believe in a gender binary, you know, and the media has lots of women in it. Why again would women in the media be like, "Oh, you called me effeminate"? Ladies, is it gay to be effeminate? Like, what is he on about?
Oh, dear.
False wannabes as opposed to the real wannabes. Anyway, enough about that guy.
The outrage worked in this instance.
It did. You know? It did. It had the correct result.
All the false wannabes out there, you know.
So we can soak ourselves in booze and celebrate.
We're all antichrists. Well, it's quite interesting in comparison to another, I guess, what the likes of Sean Plunkett, et cetera, would categorize as online kind of PC gone mad snowflake outrage. But in this instance, this next story was something that was actually kind of, it wasn't founded entirely in the true story. The story that came out about a school, I think it was in Southland somewhere, James Hargest, don't know, media wannabe. that were actually girls at the school who wanted to wear shorts were having to go to counselling before they made the decision. And that kind of headline went out, and obviously you're like, whoa.
What?
that's completely crazy. And there was a whole bunch of sort of Twitter snafus. What's the word?
Yeah, brouhaha.
Brouhaha. I love that word. Alice Neville taught me about that word. And then our own Madeleine Chapman at the spin-off called to school, and there was actually kind of a different story behind it, which also highlighted an equally kind of terrifying thing, which was that the girls who were choosing to wear shorts were getting bullied really quite aggressively by their peers, and the counselling was not sort of a, are you confused about your gender or anything like that? It was preempting some quite vile bullying. So
amazing.
There was a story behind the story, and I think it still, as Mad says, kind of highlights quite another really big problem, that it was so bad that the school had to kind of step in to warn people just about that kids can't handle going from a skirt to having a little gap between
and,
the skirt.
Yeah, it is incredible. Part of it wasn't it that they don't have shorts cut for female students yet, so they were wearing the boys' shorts from the shop rather and yet there's a fashion for the boyfriend jean and the boyfriend shirt, men's clothing is not ridiculous.
No.
And I don't understand. I also I find it really, when I was in high school in 1974, which is true, I campaigned for girls to be able to wear trousers, and we got it, we made it happen, and you had to go and present your case to the school council and blah, 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 blah. But that's, how many years ago is that? Is that 40 years ago? 45, something, I don't know. And it blows me away that there are schools that still don't have a female uniform or a unisex uniform that involves trousers and shorts.
Yeah, it is weird.
For warmth and coolness. So,
jumping over fences.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All those sorts of things you need to do.
Yeah.
And also, when has a uniform been well tailored to a body?
That is true.
Ever in the history of all.
And even if it was, you're pubescent and
exactly. And
your body changes every week.
Well, and also, all bodies are wonderful, but prepubescent people are very uncomfortable in their bodies. So even well tailored stuff just looks like it fits badly when you're 10 and 11 and 12 because you just don't know what to do with your limbs.
No. No. I remember being so ashamed going to the Auckland Girls school shop and the lady giving me a top and then being like, okay, we'll give you a couple sizes up because those are going to come in, and pointing to my chest. And me being like, oh, shame. just so embarrassed.
Those are going to come in.
And that woman has just looked at 80,000 pairs of adolescent breasts, so she's just telling it like it is.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God.
She's like,
boob projections.
Ollivanders, the guy with the wands at the beginning of Harry Potter. Those breasts require a size 12 jumper.
She just knew. It was weird. The other thing in this story was that, you kind of mentioned, they are actually getting tailored shorts. Yeah. It's just, and once they're in, the counselling goes away. It was just sort of an interim, thing to kind of patch up.
But there's some weird pushback going on from peers, peer to peer nastiness about gender identity that, makes me sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially I imagine for the most part, it really does just look the same.
I would think so.
It's a uniform.
Yeah. And what do you wear at home, over the weekend? Shorts.
Yeah.
So, weird.
Weird. Hey-oh. Weird.
But very good example of how there's stories behind stories, and sometimes these things are complex and nuanced, and you just have to talk to people instead of arguing about it online.
Yeah. I did have to feel a little bit sorry for her. I think the principal that she spoke to was sort of like,
we're trying to do the right thing.
Everyone's screaming at us and we don't know what we've done. But I did also see a lot of people on Twitter kind of once that story came out be like, I kind of jumped to conclusions here, which, I did. I think a lot of people did just reading those headlines. Shorts. Certified good by On The Rag.
Can we say that?
we say?
Stamp of approval.
Something that is not certified good, I feel comfortable saying on behalf of all of us,
yeah,
is this news. So the abortion legislation bill, the news came out that the Select Committee has recommended that medical practitioners who have conscientiously objected, not to war, not to anything like that, but to offering contraception and or abortion care to people who do not want to be pregnant or do not want to get
pregnant. The full range of healthcare.
Are going to be able to continue to deny offering contraception or the ECP, particularly the news story came out, the ECP to people who have experienced sexual assault and want to get the ECP in the aftermath of that. It is something that is true in New Zealand that medical practitioners can deny you of that, which is still continues to shock me.
Yeah.
And they don't even, I believe, have to say, I'm not going to prescribe an emergency contraceptive pill to you, but you could go somewhere else. They can just say, it is inappropriate to prescribe this for you. So they don't even have to tell you that they're withholding a treatment option. Am I right about that?
I don't know.
Yeah, that was something they're trying to get it. Yeah, there's no requirement currently for referral.
Yeah.
They can just go see it. And again, it's like that might not all well and good, but in somewhere like Auckland, you've got options. But
sure.
If you're rural, if you
there's
can't
one
travel,
GP.
There's one GP in a small town who's not into it. It's genuinely kind of like a bit of a crisis. And we published this story, an opinion piece written by the All Rands president, Terry Ballamack, who was featured on The Rag before, and Help Chief Executive Connor Twyford, where they are basically calling for sexual violence to be classed as a medical emergency in this instance and something that you can't object to. If someone comes in and is like, my arm's been cut off, you know,
yeah.
Just imagine if you replace it with any other kind of dire instance of violence and unwarranted, you know, it's just like, it boggles the mind. So I'm not quite sure what happens next. I'm not that familiar with the Select Committee process. I'm embarrassed to admit.
All I can tell you is that it's slow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, like they said, sexual assault happens to 1 in 4 New Zealand women. This is something that isn't, you know, a little small event that's kind of you can brush under the carpet. It's like we need to take this seriously. And it's a medical emergency, and it should be classed as that. And
it's bad enough how judgy some pharmacists can be when you go and get the ECP. I've had not just like one person, but like 2 or 3 different women pharmacists, like really give you the eyeball and like the third degree. And then like 1 year I took it like maybe twice in a month or something, which is not that much. Mm. And this woman, the look on her sour puss when I went in there the second time, as if I was the absolute just dirt on her shoe.
Wow.
It's like, get that fucking look off your face. I'll take this pill as many times as I want to.
Yeah, I would regard that as you being entirely responsible and taking care of yourself.
And then she said this really snarky, like, will we see you again in a few weeks?
No.
Get out of it.
It's like, maybe. Bye. That should be illegal as well.
Yeah.
And a snarky bitch to people who just don't want to get pregnant after they had a one night stand with someone they're not really into.
Because what is she hoping? Is she hoping that she's so judgy with you that you won't go for an ECP again and you'll have a baby and that'll teach you.
They're having a vibrant sex life.
That's what it's really about. She's just jealous of you having sex.
Okay. Can I ask, when you go and get the ECP, I've never had it before. Is it a process at the chemist, or do you just get it like you would ask for, I don't know, wart cream, which I have asked for before?
No, they're legally required to explain stuff. So they don't just hand it over and be like, read the instructions on the back. They have to, I mean, it's been quite some years since they had it, so some things might have changed, but they sort of have to explain that it's 2 pills, you have to take 12 hours apart.
Right.
But then I vaguely recall they ask you some quite like personal questions that don't really have nothing to do with the medication.
What's your favourite colour?
Yeah.
Do you like nacho?
Like they have to sort of ascertain at what, like, what time you had the sex.
Right.
Because obviously there's only a short window that you can take the ECP afterwards.
Yeah.
And you do this all just over the counter.
Yeah.
Having a yarn.
Yeah, you just have like a yarn with someone in public about.
They shouldn't have to ask you when you had sex. They could just say, this pill needs to be taken within this time of having sex. You think about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You
just
work
a piece
out.
Of paper Carry with instructions on it would be fine.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering if there's like, you know how these days you go to McDonald's and it's all a touch screen.
Yeah.
And you don't need the interaction. I just wonder if there could be something like that in the future. I mean, obviously automation is terrible and people lose their jobs, etc. But if it puts people through these sorts of humiliations, etc., like I've also think I spoke on this pod before about Barry the chemist yelling out the back when I went up to the counter, "We got any Vagisil? We got any Vagisil left?"
No.
And I was like, "Why do you need to do that?"
No.
I just feel like a little booth or some kind of screen could be great.
I mean, they probably have some sort of thing where they have to explain things out loud and you have to say loud, "I understand."
There's but what about like a ticker terms and conditions?
Yeah.
Just like when you download a face app or something.
Yeah. And then don't read the terms and conditions.
I accept.
I'm no chemist, but that is a tip from me.
Well, I think maybe what we could do is make sure that we share the information with each other about which pharmacies have kind, warm people and which pharmacies have cold, judgy people so that we go and give our business to the places where people are most likely to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Some kind of trip advisor.
Yeah.
For bitchy chemists.
Yeah.
That's copyright, actually.
Yeah.
That's copyright on the rag. Cool tip, Michelle. Speaking of, you've got some more cool tips of the month.
This isn't like, you know, use beeswax wrap or anything. I just, it occurred to me, I've been thinking very hard about, I've been trying to make a decision about something, about a big thing, a project that I've been offered, and I couldn't work out if I wanted to do it, which made me think that maybe I didn't want to do it. Anyway, I had a dinner last night with my coven, and I started to explain what my dilemma was, and they both went, "Oh, don't fucking do that. You don't want to do that." And I went, oh, it's so obvious to you. So my hot tip is to remind yourself that you need a coven. You need a couple of women at least. A coven has to be minimum of three, who you meet with on a regular basis, who you can, you know, the people who you don't ever ring the next day to say, "Really fucking sorry that I drank that much," or "I'm so sorry I said that." Just you'll wake up in the morning and go, "Well, that was terrific." And they know you and they know everything about you and they can see things really clearly for you and you can see things really clearly for them. And you make an effort to make sure that you get together and treat it like an appointment, which is what we try to do. Which, you know, we haven't seen each other for 2 months. Let's find a date and get it organised. So, yeah.
And can I ask what you do with the coven? Is there like a ritual sacrifice?
Yeah, we bleed things. We
bleed from your eyes.
We bleed from our eyes. That's exact. Yeah, no, we eat and drink, but there's a minimal amount of voodoo involved. But there you go. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's a hot tip. What about you, Leonie?
Mine is, so I really like perfume, right? Like quite expensive perfume, but I can't afford quite expensive perfume. But I have sort of lately been working on, so I know kind of like what types of smells I like. Mm-hmm. And I like sort of woody and cedary and then the sort of more woody floral stuff like bergamot or whatever.
Yes.
And so I've just started buying like little versions of the expensive perfumes that I like. But because they all kind of like fit within a similar like scent palette, mixing them up so that then they become different perfumes again.
Oh.
And honestly, I mean, I'm just having such a nice time doing it. And I thought if there are other people out there who are like as obsessed with perfume as I am, then they might think, oh, that's a good idea. Because like it is really lovely, like buying like a full-sized, like expensive perfume and like saving up or whatever. But I just look at them and I'm like, I just don't have $200 for you. Mm-hmm. I have to spend that on things that I need. Mm-hmm. But maybe I have $50 for the tiny version. And then you just lose a little bit of that and a little bit of another one. And then you've just got custom scent.
Tell me the practicalities. Are you mixing them on your skin or do you take them out of their bottles and put them into a new bottle?
No, I just mix them on me.
Yeah.
So I do like a couple of drops of one on my arms and then a couple of drops of another on my neck.
Somewhere
and then they
else.
All just sort of swirl together.
And what do you say when somebody says, oh, you smell delicious, what are you wearing?
I'd say, it's not that easy. Let me consult the book. No.
That's great.
But yeah, I like it. And then you sort of have, so, you know, some people have like their smell because they're just devoted to the one perfume.
Their signature.
Mm. Their signature. And I kind of feel like I found mine, but it's like, five different perfumes.
Yeah. Wow.
And then you sort of change the levels and I don't know. I'm just enjoying playing with it.
I like it.
Mm. Yeah. I think it makes you a chemist, actually.
I think so.
You're a pharmacist now.
Just a fucking judgy ass pharmacist.
Can I get an ECP from you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Dirty little slut.
Oh, fuck. Oh my God. So ashamed.
Oh, dear. My tip, it's not really a tip, it's just kind of a thing. I'm back on board with dyeing my eyelashes.
Woo!
And I'm bloody loving it. I've taken it back because I used to go to certain beauty practitioners to have it done. And every single fucking time, I'm like, I've got very sensitive eyes. Please be careful. Please don't jam it into my eyeball. And then every time I lie there and I'm like, here comes the sting, here come the tears, and I walk out like Heath Ledger's Joker, like full on just black tears down my face, stained forever. So I've taken it back into my own hands, and it's really quite easy, and I just encourage you. It also is like you save shitloads of money. It costs like $20 for a pack that lasts you forever.
Amazing.
Instead of spending $20 a time to be the Joker. You can do it in the comfort of your own home.
They look terrific.
Thank you. I do have mascara on. I will say that much.
That's all right.
But it's and so you have managed to not jam it in your own eyes whilst doing this.
Yeah, it's like you know your own limits, you know?
Yeah, that's
in
true.
A way that other people don't. I was like, I know when I go to this lash, it's going to be a problem. So I'm really into it. And it just takes 15 minutes. You just got to be careful. Put some pawpaw all the way around. So even if it does drip, you can just wipe it all off.
Ah.
And then it's just like, pow.
Hey. This is a great tip.
Yeah.
And where do you buy eyelash dye?
Great question, Michelle. Pharmacy? You actually buy it from the chemist.
Right. From the, not the bitch, though. No.
I'm really into how we're just really leaning into these gendered insults over on the rig. It's just like, fuck it. Who gives a shit?
I think because we've all got one particular person in mind when we're talking about it. Yeah.
My other tip is something that I actually have lifted from Aaron Amog of the Bachelorette New Zealand fame, who I wouldn't class as necessarily like an on-the-rag feminist icon, who isn't showing himself to be, but he did say something on the show that I have incorporated into my life. It came up during a semi sort of tense discussion where one of the contestants actually came out as being bisexual and one of the other kind of horrible guys in the group was like, oh yeah, I called that. And it was just like really tense. And then Aaron just said to him, looked at him and was like, that's a really weird thing to say.
Nice.
And it's like a beautiful, beautiful kind of just cutting someone down, but giving them the space to think about it themselves without necessarily explaining it and getting all het up. Because I always, you know, when you get stuck in those moments, we talk about it all the time and you never have the right thing to say and you want to explain to someone why what they just said was uncomfortable or not right. And I've been incorporating it. When things happen, I say it's a weird thing to say.
That's great.
And it's just, it puts a pin on it. Yeah. It puts a pin on it and it also takes it all off you to explain and just puts it on the person to go, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
What if they say, why?
Just run.
Okay.
You've done your part.
No, you could just say, I'm working this out now. And you could just say, think about it. Why?
Yeah.
Well, okay, you can't.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Go see the lady at the pharmacy.
You're weird, yeah. But yeah, it's just it's a useful thing.
What do bisexual people look like?
True. What makes you say that?
Yeah.
No, that could be different.
Cool
that could, yeah.
No, that's really good. That's a weird thing to say, yeah.
it was just a nice little moment where I was like, I don't know if he intentionally, that was something he just has that he says in those moments, or if he just came up with it on the fly, but I was like, it's very.
Remember this at Christmas.
Remember it at Christmas.
Yeah. That's good.
That's a weird thing to say, uncle.
Exactly. In other news, this is again, I feel like we should have maybe had a bit of a content warning. So we are talking about things around sexual violence a lot, this podcast, but this enormous study came out, which I knew was kind of in the works at the University of Canterbury, which showed the extent to which survivors of sexual violence are being re-traumatised in the courts. And it was this, I think they looked at 50 different cases and analysed all the language and the lines of questioning. Oh, yeah, it was 40 cases in total, including 10 that were supposed to be from this new kind of pilot court, which is supposed to get people through a lot quicker, I think, with a lot less trauma. And it kind of turns out that, a lot of the process is reinforcing certain rape mythologies and a lot of slut-shaming and stereotyping. And, yeah, I just sort of thought in the aftermath of Weinstein and obviously had the Grace Mullane sentencing and it's just a bit of an indictment. But there is also, like, there's the abortion legislation bill. Hopefully this year we are getting reforms to the way that things operate in the courts. But some of the lines of questioning that are being put out there still in 2019, 2020, are really horrible.
Mm.
Really horrible. And I know I've got an interview coming, a piece for the spin-off, where I have been speaking to a woman who has basically talked about her experience of going through the court for her own sexual assault and the things that the defence came up with. And I wondered if hers was an extreme. And it was only when I read this that I was like, oh, she's just one of 50. That's probably one of, you know, hundreds or thousands a year. But things like dredging up all your Facebook messages, everything you've ever said to certain people, and then plucking bits out and going, what did you mean here? Or there was one instance where she talks about she had left her dress at someone's house or had taken it off briefly and they were like, why did you leave your dress here? What happened here? What was going on there? And she had to explain to them calmly that it was a Miss Crab dress, obviously very expensive, silk, and she took it off so she could eat a kebab. Without getting
perfect sense
spilled
to me.
On it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly. But this was one of the defenses, like, you're a harlot.
Yeah.
You just take off your clothes everywhere. And it's so surreal. And this is something from like 3 years ago from, you know, it's just like, and then they're like, well, what were you wearing under? And she's like, well, I was wearing a slip. But which it doesn't even matter if I was naked. Like, I just didn't want to mess up my Miss Crab dress.
I think we've all eaten a kebab naked. There's a massive disconnect, isn't there, between the line of questioning and the assumptions that are made by men and what we understand of how the world actually works for us. So those questions like, what were you wearing? Why did you take your dress off? Why did it take so long to report this? Who did you tell? Who didn't you tell? All those things, you know, we all read those the court cases, the reporting on them and go, I totally get that. That's what I would do. Yeah. This makes perfect sense to me. But they're talked about by those lawyers as though they're outlier behaviours.
Mm.
They just don't know us.
Yeah.
They haven't met us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be great if the line of questioning could just morph, evolve into just establishing whether someone is lying or not, and that's it. Like, there's no need to establish whether someone deserved it, because that's all of those lines of questioning are.
Yeah.
It's just, that's not part of your job as the, you know, the other lawyer. It's not. It's just to decide if she's lying or not.
Yeah.
Mm.
Stop trying to make it sound like, you know, there's justifiable reasons for sexually assaulting someone.
There are previous behaviours that led to
exactly.
mean you deserved that.
And that's exactly what the rape mythology is.
Yeah.
It's just the idea of, did she deserve it in many different...
Yeah.
That's the many different faces of that.
Yes. Mm. That is exactly right. You're bang on.
Yeah.
Mm. And on that, at least, you know, this month, women everywhere breathe a sigh of relief to see that Harvey Weinstein was found guilty.
Yeah.
Again, very telling that it was something that a lot of people weren't sure was going to happen.
Yeah.
Which is just...
Yeah.
Which is just crazy, given
We're so used
to the volume of
not being heard, not being believed.
Yeah.
I guess there was just so much evidence that the justice system was like, oh, we've got no choice. We're going to find them guilty. Fine.
Got it. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, yay? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, yay. No, it's yay.
It's weird.
We've got to take the wins where we get them because we don't get that many wins. Mm. And this is, yeah, I mean, this is the ground zero, in a sense, hashtag me too story, right? This is where it broke in a global sense. I know me too was around before that, but this is where it broke. And he's, that fucker's going to prison for up to, what is it, 27 years?
Do you reckon, so he is actually going to prison? This is not going to be like a home detention situation.
I doubt it. The charges are too serious. Because I don't think you get home detention for something that you could be sentenced to 27 years for in prison.
They are felony charges, right? So.
And the judge sent him straight to prison, though, of course, he had a pain in his chest and went to hospital instead on the way. Donna Rotunno, his lawyer, who I hate more than almost anyone on the planet.
She's a trip.
Said that he took it like a man. Yeah, he faked a heart attack and went to hospital. That's pretty much how men take shit when it's handed to them because they deserve it. I tell you, I just quickly tell you about Donna Rotunno because she did that interview with, was it either Jodie Cantor or Megan, the two women who wrote, she said, and they did an interview with her, and she talked at the end of it famously now, this is only a couple of weeks ago, about how she had never been sexually assaulted because, quote, I would never put myself in that position.
Yeah.
And, women who get assaulted, it's their responsibility. And do men have responsibility? They should get a signed consent form every time they have sex with women. That's the only thing that men should do. And I ride a stationary bike in my office, and usually I can ride at about 21, 22 kilometres an hour for about 25 minutes. I listened to that interview and I rode that bike at 28 kilometres an hour for 45 minutes. Whoa. I was so fucking angry. So that's the only upside to her. Is that I got a fucking great workout.
Speaking of shitbag old men being humiliated in a court of law. I was in the Wellington High Court last week watching Bob Jones make a total tit of himself because he had an angry vendetta against a young Māori woman, Renee Maihi, who said he was racist because he is demonstrably racist. And he said, I'm going to sue you for defamation. And the judge didn't end up having to make a judgment because Bob Jones dropped the case because he knew that he couldn't win. I'm assuming at some point his lawyers went, got to have a word with you, Bob.
I think they might have said that several days before he actually dropped the case.
Yeah.
I think they were, don't you think there were a few days where they were going, Bob, nah, can we?
You know, stuff that you said about Maori culture being like irrelevant and useless and dead and that everyone agrees with you, including all the Maoris, you know, I think that that's not helping.
Maybe it's not working.
But the fact that he dropped the case and had to walk away was another victory, I think, for women and for people who have previously felt powerless against the justice system, which is meant to favour men like Bob Jones and Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
And in both of these cases, in American law and in New Zealand law, it didn't. And it felt really good.
Yeah.
And I would like to think, in the Bob Jones case anyway, the judge was Justice Susan Thomas. And I'm not saying that a male judge would have judged this differently. Not that there was a judgment, but she did set a tone for that Bob Jones trial, which was very much like, I'm not here to put up with your shit. She wasn't rude, but she also wasn't, she was just like, I see through your shtick, old man Jones, and it's not going to work on me, so either just make your case well or leave. And that's kind of what they had to do. It was cool.
In my honestly held opinion, she's probably not one of those judges who has spent evenings sipping cognac in the Wellington Club with Sir Bob Jones or anybody like
that. She honestly seems like a G. Her hair was purple. I was just like, I like this woman. Yeah, her hair was purple.
Yes. This is very cool.
I could just see her, like, hanging out with her mates and, like, listening to like Heart or Slayer or something. Like, she was cool.
Oh, yeah. Dear.
So, you know, yeah. Couple of
big,
wins.
Big wins, eh?
Yeah, a couple of wins.
Yeah.
And he's still facing more charges in California. And, yeah, so.
Oh, is he?
Yes. Yes, he's not done yet. So, okay. And he gets out of hospital. He'll have to go to another prison and face another court case. He should probably spend the rest of his life just flitting between prison and court.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's a lovely retirement for him. I love it for him.
What should we talk about now? What about chick scientists?
This Michelle? Was this occurred to me in the shadow of that appalling case in Australia where Hannah Clark and her three children were murdered, and everybody's, you know, monster, what a terrible, you know, this is an unusual and extreme case. And then I read the story about Ken Cochran, who was quoted in the newspapers. He saying that the reason people don't want to look after white bait. So people want you to stop white baiting. God, I'm not making any sense. People want you to stop white baiting. And all the evidence comes from chick scientists, and they should be not listened to and diminished and dismissed. So he's suggesting that all the data is pointless and irrelevant because women came up with it. And you can denigrate a whole gender of a whole group of people who are scientists because they're women. And that seems like the beginning. That seems like the soft end of a continuum that ends up with saying women are chattel and objects and to be owned and possessed. You just ignore them because they're women. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but
it all lives on the spectrum.
Yeah. And just chucking that shit around. Don't believe these scientists because they're not men.
Chucks
scientists.
You don't really hear chick that often, eh?
No.
Oh, you do on the West Coast, apparently. That's great.
I have a marine biologist friend, a chick scientist, if you will.
Yeah.
Who would quite often, there's like signs that go up around Auckland during white baiting season. So like ring this number to buy kilos and kilos of white bait. And so she would ring those numbers and just educate the person on the other
That's fantastic.
About what a threatened species they are. And I was just satisfied. She'd do it on work time and no one cared, like, because I used to work with her. She's just like, I'm just going to make a phone call. Just be like, hi, I saw your sign. Here's why you shouldn't be doing this. And I was just like, that's so awesome.
That's so cool.
Can I just read you Ken's quote and said, I'm listening to a whole bunch of chick scientists who, if you look at the view that they were pitching, everybody in New Zealand should not shave their armpits. I'm not sure how that's relevant. Should white bait in their jandals. After they catch one paddy for tea, they should sit down, hold hands and sing Kumbaya. So just dismissing people because they're women.
I mean, that sounds like a good night unto me.
Yeah.
Sounds fucking great. We've sung Kumbaya on the
podcast. We actually have. We've basically done all these things.
Jandals. We just
white bait and jandals.
To share a single white bait patty.
Stop shaving.
Single patty for the chicks. Oh,
there. My next placard for whatever the next single patty for the chicks.
And just in terms of media coverage of that, when he was told to resign because he's stupid and clearly no good at his job on that particular committee, the headline in the newspaper was that he had been forced to resign and that for being outspoken.
Not asked to leave for being dumb.
Being a dick.
Those are quite different things.
Yeah, really different, right? Yeah. Yeah. Stupid old man loses job for being fuckwit is the headline I would have written if I worked at the Herald. I don't know why I don't get a job there.
It should get you in. You know when they get like celebs to come in and do a guest edit for a day? Just get Michelle to come in and slash all the headlines. It's all swear words. Oh dear. But yeah, it is an interesting consideration talking about just broadly kind of media framing as well. That horrific event in Australia, that man whose name I literally don't even know and I don't want to know, being described who, you know, murdered his children and his wife, being described as a footy star, ex-NRL player, a loving and dedicated father, and not, you know.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, that he was a really good dude who snapped one day. No.
Yes. There's a real interesting, that piece, I can't remember who wrote it, forgive me, but talks about the good bloke who snapped thing and also says we need to kind of find a place between describing the loving, dedicated father and then also, like you say, the monster thing. Because then that others it and makes it seem like that came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
What? Domestic violence? What?
Yeah.
And maybe it's just calling things what they are and not necessarily placing these weird.
And so, yeah, because it is connected in my mind to dismissing chick scientists. It's on that continuum. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, like describing Hitler as somebody who was very fond of cats.
And aren't.
Not really relevant and not a piece of information we need.
You just reminded me of that, bringing back to that facial hair diagram that I was talking about at the start of the podcast. In all of the moustache diagrams, there's also one that's very clearly a Hitler moustache, but they call it the toothbrush. And then someone just retweeted and they're like, oh, that's what we're calling that now?
This is not a style of facial hair anyone has had since the 1940s.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't need to be covered.
It's a very comprehensive diagram if you haven't seen it. Shallst we talk about what we've been watching and reading this month that we have found interesting? Who would like to go first?
Yes, you. Oh, yeah, no, you.
No, you.
You're going to talk about the legend of
Baron Thoa.
I met him. He's 6'6".
John Toohey?
Yes.
Oh, my God, amazing.
Yeah.
So this is less of a feminist recommendation and more of a brown excellence recommendation, but I recently went to see The Legend of Baron Thoa, and it is a film with an entirely Māori Pacific cast and crew, and it's directed by Kyle McNaughton, and his partner, Kerry Wakia, produced it, and it's just it's brown excellence from top to bottom. It's also an incredibly entertaining film about a legendary South Auckland wrestler and then his son, sort of, who has moved away to Australia and become a bit bougie, has to come back and remember his roots in Manurewa. Mm-hmm. And it is like an amazing tribute to like 80s era WWF and South Auckland, and it's very funny. And the main actor, if you're into boys, is kind of worth going to check it out for him alone. He is a beautiful man. But also incredible performances from Jay Langaya and John Toohey, who plays Baron Thoa. Mm-hmm. And his character is just probably the most lovable and entertaining character in all of New Zealand film history.
Ooh,
just putting that out there.
Wow. They're cool.
But I am going to say, I do need to rewatch it. I am going to say it possibly doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Right.
It's a bit of a sauce fest.
Okay.
Mm. But it does make you very proud to be Polynesian. That's fantastic. I'll say that much.
Yeah. Can I take my granddaughter to see it, or is it?
It's a bit violent.
Okay, all right.
It is a bit. It's all sort of punchy WWF wrestling moves violent.
Yeah.
Although one guy does have his leg broken in quite a
I can graphic way.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends on her capacity for whatever she's into.
Yeah, she's coming this weekend. I'm just looking for fun things to do. That Nana Mishy would like to. Hey, so I went to see a play as part of the Auckland Fringe, which is on at the moment. And it's kind of silly to do this because it's finished. It was only on for 3 nights. But it really blew me away. It's Catherine Delahunty, Green, ex-Green MP, and her sister Sarah Delahunty, who's been an actor for the last 40 years, I guess. And it's called #UsToo, and it's about their lives. Starts with them in their bedroom, their shared bedroom in the 1950s, and growing up in New Zealand, being part of the feminist movement and green activists and theatre practitioners and working in television. So their lives. And so it's it really struck me that I have not seen two women in their 60s, late 60s, telling their life story on stage very fucking often.
Yeah.
And it was so delightful. There's a lot of, it's quite raw. It's really personal. It's very sweet. It makes you angry. It makes you sad. It's very funny. But, yeah, women of that age don't often get to tell their stories.
Yeah.
They don't get characters written for them. They don't get cast in things. So these two made a show that is them telling their stories. And it was really cool. And there were Marama Davidson and Goldie's Gutterman and Chloe Swarbrick, it was the opening night. They were all in the front row. So it was exciting too. And it's at the basement. It's really intimate. And afterwards they all came, you know, they came out, they wore pajamas for the whole show. Oh. And they came out in their pajamas and had a glass of wine with us. And, you know, it was just really women telling their stories.
That sounds cool.
It makes you really, wonder really great.
How, yeah, it makes you realise how infrequently that happens. So it was very cool. Mm. So I don't know if they're taking it on the road. I think they did it last year and this is a reprise of their season for Fringe. But if they're taking it anywhere else and you see the Delahunty sisters doing hashtag us too, then please go see it.
Cool.
Yes, it sounds wonderful. I have a terrible recommendation. This is not a feminist recommendation. This is not something that is you're going to learn anything from, but it might make you feel like a slightly better person. Love is Blind on Netflix, the reality television program, is probably the stupidest reality television show I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of shows. And I spent all of Saturday in my pajamas, much like Adela Hunty, with a glass of wine, just watching the show and scoffing and laughing. If you just need to turn your brain off for a while and watch people just being idiots. The premise is basically it's house full of women, house full of men. They date, but in a pod, and they speak through a wall and they don't see each other.
So it's a bit like The Voice?
It's a bit like The Voice. It's a bit like The Voice.
The Circle.
And The Circle. It's a fusion of all the new modern things. But it's just so funny because they just sit there on a couch just talking to a wall. And yet it's somehow extremely compelling. And they all fall in love within, 8 hours? And you're getting proposals. You're getting the craziest shit ever. Yeah, so they propose to each other. And that's when they meet. Is at
Oh, that's the you have to pass that hurdle before you're allowed to meet someone.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, they have to propose in order to meet.
Yes.
Are they allowed longer than 8 hours, or do they just choose?
Oh, they're allowed as long as they want, but these people are just keen. Keen as hell. But what's quite interesting about it is, like, on paper, if they had done it differently, it's sort of an interesting premise that you fall in love in whatever time frame you want with someone who you never see. Meaning, you know, it's like appearance doesn't really matter, whatever. It's all about your soul, whatever. But they've cast entirely extremely conventionally attractive, young people that it kind of takes that interesting element away from it at all. And it's like, this is just basically
marriage. I mean, I suppose it does stop it from being like a kind of a gotcha experiment if they're casting some conventionally attractive people and some not conventionally attractive people, and then having like people like fall in love but
the
then
geek.
Meet and then she's like, oh, he's so ugly or something. And then, you know, like that would be really degrading for the not conventionally attractive person. So
this is true.
Maybe that's a blessing.
This is true. I just want to see all normies.
Totally. Oh, true.
All normies just bumbling around and not these real sort of, they're just all, they're all hotties.
Oh my God, I went to a bar restaurant last night, a new one.
Mm.
100% of the staff were blonde, blue-eyed, like Nordic models. It's delicious.
Yeah.
And the service was top-notch, but it was really buzzy. Just
these
beautiful people just gliding around like some kind of Aryan utopia. Sorry, it's so insulting, but honestly,
that would put me off. I would, I wouldn't want to hog into my plate full of hoo-ha with all these.
The hoo-ha is very good there.
I heard.
Oh, yeah.
And it's my favourite dish. With all these gorgeous people, I'd be looking at them going, I'll just be up to my elbows and nosh now.
I don't give a shit. I ate that burrata cheese like it was going out of fashion.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's just weird is all. Beautiful people are weird en masse.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not the first person to make the observation about that. Like, right. So that's just why I kind of knew. There's a bit of a mythology around it, yeah. I think. It's interesting. Might be a story. Anyway, speaking of stories, what have you been reading?
Nothing.
Yeah. I have nary touched a book this month.
I'm having a lovely time reading. I'm reading Renee's These Two Hands, which came out a couple of years ago, 2017. And it's fabulous. It's a memoir. So Renee, if anybody doesn't know who she is a playwright and novelist and poet and an all-round amazing woman who is now 90, but when she was 88, she wrote this memoir, which is made up of not chapters but patches. So it's like a literary patchwork quilt, and there are bits of her plays and there are her poems and bits of her prose, but also just her telling stories from different parts of her life. And it's like snuggling up underneath a patchwork quilt. Mm. It's so comforting, and it makes me feel like I'm in a conversation with a very interesting person who's sweet and lovely and has her shit together. And I love it. It's making me really happy.
Yeah.
It's helping me sleep. It's good. So highly recommending These Two Hands.
It's a great recommendation.
I haven't started reading it yet, but I was given for my birthday Things I Don't Want to Know by Deborah Levy. So I think I talked earlier that I'd read two of her books over the break, The Man Who Saw Everything and Hot Milk. But this is like an autobiographical, one of three autobiographical books about, and the first one's all about like writing and being a writer. So I haven't read it, but I've heard it's very good, and I'm very excited to read it.
Nice.
Yes, Things I Don't Want to Know. I have been doing strictly internet reading this month, and I've been really enjoying the work of a journalist called Taylor Lorenz, who I think used to write for The Atlantic and has now moved to some fancy new, maybe the New York Times, who writes basically entirely about internet culture and particularly TikTok, and traces like the origins of these massive kind of dance crazes that we see, and has just written something about how all the new wave of political activists are on TikTok. And it's terrifying because I don't know what the fuck she's talking about most of the time. But I'm glad that someone is doing that work, because it's like a whole kind of unexplored area that I think is just not really taken seriously, these like new apps and just young people in general, sure. You know, and she really takes it seriously and just goes real deep and, yeah, unearths all this stuff that's just like no one else is even bothering to look at. So if you're into that kind of stuff, I recommend giving Taylor Lorenz a Google. She wrote this amazing thing, which also freaked me out, at the kind of around New Year when they did this sort of retrospective looking back at the 20 years of the millennium, yeah. And she was looking at now there's like a whole strand of teenagers that are like Y2K teenagers. Uh-huh, like they love Y2K fashion and culture. Right now, sure. Because they were born after that.
Oh, my God.
So now they deck out their rooms with like posters of like Chad Michael Murray and and like, yeah, and all the heartthrobs from like the Y2K era, and they have those little like pink portable CD stereos. CDs are like a collectible. It's terrifying, but it's just quite awesome as well.
Fuck, to see. I just sold all my CDs nothing.
You can sell them to teens for a hot price at the minute. It's crazy. But yeah, Taylor Lorenz, strong recommend.
I do actually, now that you've said that, for some good online reads, I read this really interesting review of Gia Tolentino's Trick Mirror. It's by this writer called Lauren Euler. It was on the London Review of Books. And it's quite a scathing review. And there's a lot to disagree with. But Gia Tolentino tweeted it herself. It was quite a good shady tweet. But she was basically like, I've had so many good reviews. A bad one is quite refreshing. Everyone should read this.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it's really great. So I think it's really worth read whether you agree with it or not. Lauren Euler gets maybe a little bit mad at Gia Tolentino for being pretty and having friends.
Right.
Which is probably the most baffling part of the review. But if you actually dive into the other stuff that Lauren Euler has written for the London Review of Books, she's an incredible writer. And I just found myself very happy that there's a woman critic engaging seriously with a woman author's work. Like men do.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's not someone bitching about someone's book. It's criticism. It's proper criticism in really like respected publications. And I felt really happy about that. Yeah. And so I don't necessarily agree with the review. I'm just really pleased that there's like a really great young critic. I think she's about the same age as Gia Tolentino, Lauren Euler. So there's this young, smart, super engaged, really scathing. Like she's really fucking mean and it's quite wonderful.
Love
that. Another really great piece that she wrote is about astrology and how that's like the millennial Bible, but Lauren Euler thinks it's all bullshit, but her reasons for why are quite compelling. Not complete bullshit, but anyway, she's just really worth looking at, I think, if you want to someone.
How do you spell her surname?
O-Y-L-E-R.
Okay.
Euler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a great piece by Alice Webler-Dahl producing this podcast at the moment about astrology, which you should have a read of.
Do it.
Pisces season.
Pisces
season. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I guess
so. Is that it right now? Yeah. Alrighty, let's finish up with a Kia ora Queenie celebrating some awesome feminists who did some cool things this month. I would like to nominate Gulruz Garaman, who this week opened up on the project and shared her diagnosis of having multiple sclerosis. It was an extremely, extremely brave thing to do.
Yeah.
And I put the quote here that she said, it's important for New Zealanders to know that their House of Representatives is representative. We come with all sorts of different lived experiences, and that includes disability and healthcare needs. The MS community deserves that. So I thought it was just, I was absolutely gobsmacked.
She's very cool. Totally.
Yeah.
Bravery and coming out with something so vulnerable, you know, in an election year, it's all, I mean, she gets a lot of stuff.
I like it that she picked her moment, because I think she got the diagnosis 18 months ago and she didn't talk about it until she was ready to talk about it when she
had lived with it and understood it better. And it makes so much sense. It's a smart thing to do.
It's a really smart thing.
Maybe because she's a fucking smart lady.
I think that could be
fucking smart lady.
And another smart lady is Kanoa Lloyd, who took the challenge of speaking out against her employer over Dancing with the Stars and survived death threats and increased security at work. And I mean, there was a lot of stuff happening in her place of work this week that would be very difficult to deal with. And so, I'm really proud of her. That sounds really patronizing. I am really impressed with her for being as outspoken as she is and has been before.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Toe took her that. She continues to use that platform for good.
Yeah.
And my Kia ora Queenie for this month is Renee Maihi, who I talked about just before, who faced off against rich old man Bobo Jones in a court of law. And in my eyes, she won. She maintained her dignity and mana throughout. And he said a lot of really terrible stuff about her.
Mm.
Did the same thing that you were talking about those lawyers, where his lawyers went through her Facebook and just gave Bob stuff to sling at her, like about how she wrote about being depressed about 6 years ago and single, wanting a boyfriend. So he slung every kind of piece of shit at her. She didn't say a goddamn thing about him except for her opinions on his racism. And then she spoke about her whakapapa and her experience with racism and how she wanted her son to grow up in a better world. And she just was amazing. She just held it together and stood up for all of us. So she's definitely my Kia ora Queenie this month and for many months to come.
Kia ora Queenie. What a lineup.
What a lineup.
Yeah, yeah.
What a pod. We've reached the end. I want to stress as well that we are going to do, we've got a March podcast coming as well.
You bet.
This isn't our last On the Rag podcast right now. We're going to have hopefully a boozy celebration.
We're going to get drunk and cry in March.
And sing Kumbaya and
not shave our armpits.
Hog and the hoo-ha or whatever it was that Michelle said. Just before. But thank you for sticking with us to today and always. Oh, God, here I go. Here I go. It's been an honor. we'll be back. We'll be back in March. And I implore you, if you haven't yet, do keep an eye on our YouTube channel and watch all our the On the Rag web series and get ready for season 2, because we're coming in hot.
Hot.
Hot as hell. All right, we'll talk to you next month. Hei te rā marama.
Ka kite anō.
Mā te wā.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.